The gospel reading this morning continues Mark's introduction of Jesus. Last week's reading showcased the authority of Jesus in his teaching and in his works. Today, Mark focuses on another important aspect of who Jesus is and why he matters for our living today. Hear these words from chapter 1. In the morning, while it was still very dark, he got up and went out to a deserted place, and there he prayed. And Simon and his companions hunted for him. When they found him, they said to him, "Everyone is searching for you." He answered, "Let us go on to the neighboring towns, so that I may proclaim the message there also. For that is what I came out to do." And he went throughout Galilee, proclaiming the message in their synagogues and casting out demons. A leper came to him, begging him, and kneeling, he said to him, "If you choose, you can make me clean." Moved with compassion, Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, "I do choose. Be made clean."
Will you pray with me? May the words of my mouth and the meditations of each and every one of our hearts be acceptable to you, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. She used it as an icebreaker. You know, one of those seemingly innocuous questions that simply gets the people in the gathering to speak. And yet, I should have known that nothing this person ever asked was simple or easy. Nothing was as simple as an icebreaker with her. Her name was Greta. Her appearance was simple. She couldn't have been more than 5'1". She wore her hair in a ponytail that was always behind her. She dressed simply. And she had an aura and an air about her that just welcomed you into conversation with her. Always simple, always welcoming. But Greta was no ordinary human being. Greta was a PhD student in theology. And Greta, behind all of that simple, welcoming exterior, had a mind as brilliant as I have ever encountered. One that could take something and parse it deeper and deeper and deeper until you had no idea which way was up anymore. And there she was, our TA for our intro theology class in seminary. There she was with a group of wannabe pastors, a group of people so excited to get out there and talk about God, and her job was to help us learn how to think about God, how to talk about God, and how to do it with layer upon layer upon layer. And so I should have known that even though this was an icebreaker throwaway question, it would be a question that mattered. And it's a question that has stuck with me for a long time. She said to us, "As you go about doing your work, or as you go about in your own personal life praying, as Jesus did, when you go to address or describe God, you will find yourself settling in to a couple of adjectives that become your go-to adjectives. When you go to address God, a couple of words will often come into your mind, and those are the fundamental way you think about God." Now, before I tell you mine, I want you to think for a moment if you have such words. When you think about God, or when you start praying, or if you had to describe God in one or two words, what would those words be? Now, because today is an annual meeting day, because we expect you to be awake and alive, to share your voice and to open up, we're going to start practicing here and now. Anyone want to share one of the words that came to their mind, or two words that when you think about God or how you describe God?
Perfection and love.
Perfection and love. I heard some other voices.
Full of grace.
Magnificent. Merciful.
Most precious.
Divine. Creative. Cindy, I know you're way back there, but I know you were going to say something.
Mysterious.
Compassionate.
Patient.
What's that?
Patient.
Patient? Thank God, right? I don't know if you've caught on to my two yet, but they are two that I, even if I write words on this paper, I invariably fall back into when I lead prayer. For me, I usually start with holy and loving God. Holy and loving. Holy because it is the mysteriousness. It is the reaching beyond what we know. It is beautiful. It is, as we talked about last week, authoritative. God is holy and amazing and awesome. And yet, for me, the other word that I come back to always is loving. Because I cannot actually picture God without the concept of love. Yesterday, in that board meeting down in Woodstock, Connecticut, we talked a lot about why we were doing this, and the answer of why we were thinking about rearranging how we are organized was so that we could more faithfully follow Jesus and that we might more faithfully offer love. At which point Sandy, a woman from Southern Connecticut, stood up and said, "That's the problem. One of the things we have to figure out is what does love look like behaviorally?" Another simple question that may just stick with you. And I think that's at the heart of what Mark is writing to us about today in this reading. For right after he introduces the holiness of Jesus in last week's reading, the amazing authority, the power to capture our minds and our lives, Mark immediately turns to this side of Jesus. Love in action, love on the move. And if you listened carefully to Joanne, love that is chosen. In Christianity and in the United Church of Christ, we often welcome a broad perspective on exactly who Jesus is. Virgin birth or not, divine or not, we welcome and entertain those questions as we struggle on our quest. But one of the things that we fundamentally hold to is that through Jesus, we get as good a glimpse of God as we have ever gotten. That to look at Jesus is to see the best glimpse of God available to human eyes. That Jesus gives us the way to follow God. And here, in this passage, fundamental to Mark's understanding of Jesus, right there still in chapter 1 of Mark's gospel, Jesus chooses compassion. He chooses healing. He chooses love. And you need to know that it's not just here that compassion and love are on display. Almost invariably throughout the Gospels, when Jesus chooses to interact and to heal, it says that he was moved by compassion. Compassion is a word that has rich and semantic meaning in both Hebrew and Aramaic. The word that we translate as compassion is the plural of the noun that means womb. A feeling located deep inside of ourselves and inextricably connected with life. Compassion is a profoundly connectional word. William Blake contrasts mercy with compassion in this way. Mercy, he says, wears a human face. Compassion, a human heart. Mark wants us to know that it is precisely how and why Jesus does what he does is because he chooses compassion, he chooses healing, he chooses love. And as this text bounced around in my head for this last week, two implications kept rearing up for me. The first relates back to last week and our exploration of the authority of Jesus. And it seems to me that where that authority actually comes from is, in fact, love. It is love that makes God's authority worth honoring, following, and giving our whole lives to. In Paul's wonderful letter to the Corinthians, that passage you know about love, the one that shows up at every wedding, are these words. If I speak in the tongues of mortals and angels, but do not have love, I'm a clanging cymbal. If I understand all mysteries and knowledge, if I have all power in the world but not love, I am nothing. If I give away everything, even my body, but do not have love, I gain nothing. And so often we think about those words as attributive of human life, and they are. But look at the three phrases. God spoke in creation and offered words, and it would have been a clanging cymbal if it wasn't love that animated it all. We understand God to have all power, the power to move mountains, the power to set people free, but if that wouldn't be motivated by love, it would be nothing. And if God were to give everything away, if God would even send Jesus to earth to live and to teach and to heal and to serve, and yes, even Jesus give his body away, without that kind of love, we would have gained nothing. It is love that makes God so awesomely holy and worthy of authority. It is that love that turns God speaking into beautiful music worth listening our whole lives to. It is love that Jesus offered and demonstrated all the way and especially on the cross. Love gives us a roadmap, a way of living, a model for good life, something for us to commit to offer the whole world. Love is our calling, our gift, our command, even if it is costly and risky. After worship today, we will gather in the sanctuary to attend to the business matters of the church, to matters high and holy. And I hope that as we talk about things like Proctor Hall and our upcoming budget, that love is both our motive and our measuring stick. That when we look at our budget, our abundance, our blessings, how we choose to allocate our precious resources should always include and be measured by how much love is in there. Will we give money to mission and action, motivated by prudence or rule or obligation? Or will we entrust it to that great committee as an offering of love? Is the amount of money that we are sending out these doors to help heal the world, is it safe and contained, or is it costly and risky? As we invest in additional things like staffing to help with Sunday school, is that a measure of our success and something to be proud of, or a measure of how much we love our kids? And by our kids, I will remind you that when they were baptized, all of you claimed those kids as your own. So they are not just the kids of our biological or adoptive parents in the room. They are all of our kids. Are we risking enough to support dynamic worship that offers love? Are we extending ourselves far enough to enrich our fellowship and formation? A measure of how well we are doing church and being church always should be this authoritative call to love, to remember that it is our mission to be God's love. And that is good and true. But there is another thing that rattled in my head that I need you to remember today. It is the story behind that which Joanne read, the story behind this table that is set out before you. It is the story that animates our life together, the message that Jesus is talking about here in Mark. And that is that God's love, the love Jesus embodies and shares, is offered freely and fully, not just to the characters in the Bible, but to each and every one of us and all of us together. That we are not just called to be love givers, but before we can do that well, we must open ourselves to be love receivers. That Jesus chooses, God chooses to offer love, and it is there for us free and clear. My theological hero, my theological touchstone, my very first theological love was actually Henry Nouwen. His simplicity and depth of writing is something that has stayed with me, and he claims that our first task as Christians and as a Christian church is first to fully embrace and claim that we are God's beloved. Not for anything we have done or will ever do, but that we are simply God's beloved, not earned or merited, not achieved, but simply offered and given by a God who chooses to do so, and then asks us to choose to receive it, to be embraced by it. In this story, Jesus comes across a leper, and whether he was really suffering from the disease of leprosy or not, we do not know, but this is what we know. To be a leper was to carry around your burden visibly. People could see it. And to be a leper was to be someone who was unclean. And so to approach someone who was a leper or to touch someone who was a leper was to encounter and take on that uncleanliness to yourself. And so this leper faced two challenges. The first was dealing with whatever affliction bound him. And the second was the fact that he was consigned to a life where people always avoided him, a life where he was never welcomed fully into a sense of community. And Jesus looked at him, and he saw him, and Jesus chose to touch him and heal him and to welcome him back into community. And friends, I don't know what your burdens are, whether they're visible or invisible. I don't know if the heartache that you carry about with you is of related to yourself or someone that you love. I don't know if you're carrying secrets that you think would make people shun you or not. But what Mark wants you to know, what is inherent to who Jesus is and how he acts, is that God, that Jesus, chooses to offer us love. And our first task before we do anything is to accept and embrace that love, so that then we might be love bearers for the world. In theology class, in seminary, we would have argued and debated until we were blue in the face as to whether the holy or the loving was more important. We would have debated until our eyes grew heavy as to whether or not it was the compassion that mattered, or whether or not it was the power that mattered. My answer is yes. They both matter. You cannot engage in this life without both of them and so much more. Next week, we turn to Transfiguration, and we then begin our journey in Lent. In the 2 weeks before we do so, Mark wants us to remember two things: that Jesus is awesome, that Jesus is deserving of all of our mystery, our imagination, and all of our humility. And that Jesus also is completely, totally, and fully filled with love. That is the good news for this day. Amen.